Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warrior Man Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warrior Man. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/StephenTheWarrior Man. You are listening to my podcast show in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload shows to it, you know, once every week, once every 2 weeks. I had a very super busy last few weeks. I had a guy fight in Bellator. I had UFC in Houston. I just been busy, you know, with fighters and so on. And definitely forgive me. Please be patient with me whenever I have those moments. I do my best to try to get a show uploaded. I just got super busy and I wasn't able to pull it off this time. So please forgive, but I'm going to do my best to cover as much as I can. And also, as I look at the slate, I'm going to miss some things because I wasn't able to watch every fight, but I will make sure that I get the previews for you, the Glory previews, and of course the Yakao preview going down in England. But go ahead and get to the rest of it. The other way you are watching or you're listening to my podcast is through iTunes, which is the most efficient way. Enter LORDGAUL or enter Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine and the podcast pops right up. So a lot of stuff to talk about in the kickboxing world. I'm gonna make sure I get you guys your fix. I got more full rules Muay Thai coming next week because I just need the time to watch the fights. I just, like I said, I've been crazy busy, but I'm gonna go ahead and get your kickboxing fixed to you, and I'll get some full rules Muay Thai thanks to the Yakao event, and I'll go ahead and keep it rolling. Let's go ahead and enjoy that journey of revisiting kickboxing for the last 2.5 weeks. Gonna go ahead and start with Infusion. Infusion had a show. They've got their tournament going on, but on the 19th, they had a card, and on that card, they had a four-man tournament. Philip Salmon defeats Adam Martins in extra rounds, and then in probably one of the bigger robberies of the year, Christopher Mena gets a victory over Bo Super Pro Samui. It's always disappointing whenever you get cards that go in the favor of the hometown guy in such a way, and Spain has got a history of it. Spain has got a bad history of this sort of thing happening. I've talked about it with Abraham Aquini before. Abraham Aquini, at minimum, there should have been an extra round with him and Andy Sauer, and that was the win that kind of put him on the map. He scored a down when Andy Sauer was throwing a kick, but after that, Andy Sauer got up and pretty much, you know, won the rest of that round and definitely dominated the third. The first round was I leaned towards Andy, but it had some close moments. But the worst one, as bad as that one was, the ones and for Aquini for Albert Krauss, which was an absolute just one-sided beatdown, was that one was probably the worst. So I've looked into the history with some of the fighters that there are situations where you get a decision that just scratches your head. Christopher Mena, at minimum, it felt like they wanted him to get to the finals. And shout out to Vinny Sherman for calling it as he saw it. You know, he didn't go ahead and play the promotion guy. He didn't play the home crowd guy. He simply said it was a robbery. It's one of the worst robberies he ever saw. He thought it was a clear win for Bo Super Pro Samui, who had, you know, not just you know, victory, but he was flashy. He was having fun out there, and Christopher Mena had nothing for it, and somehow he got his hand raised. Christopher Mena moves on to the tournament final where he meets Philippe Salmon, and Salmon was just too much for him, too much offense. Christopher Mena was slow, never really got into his flow at all. Salmon getting this win moves him into the tournament final, the big one that they're having, which is, I believe, is supposed to go down in December. But I do not see him as a person who has a chance to win that tournament in full. I think he can be competitive, but Tayfun Askin's one of the guys who he's going to meet down the road. Muhammad Jiraiya, whoever he has matched up with of the winners so far, he's got the least skill set to have success against them. So we'll see how it goes for him. Maybe something happens in his camp from now to then. But I lean on him getting to the tournament being the accomplishment. I do not see him being victorious over some of the better guys in their field. Going to go ahead and go to a 72.5 kg world title, about 160 pounds. Basically, they put Tayfun Askin against Fran Palenzuela. And shout out to Palenzuela, who had some very competitive moments in terms of being able to bite down, fight back. Tayfun Askin, just too much. Too much combinations, too strong. Able to get the stoppage in the fifth round. Tayfun Askin, he needs to be on a bigger stage. He's got the style. He's got the aggression. Like, he lets his hands go. You want to see him. A Glory or K1's got to be considering this guy. Infusion, of course, I see them as a very good promotion that's putting on consistent shows and they're giving kickboxing opportunities. They've got their own stars that rank world class for sure. And Ilyas Belaid and, of course, Muhammad Jiraiya, as I mentioned before. Amon Barlow. Anessa Maxson, they've got their own stars for their brand. But I definitely am hoping that some of the athletes like Tafu Naskin, Elias Bilal already had the opportunity to fight in Glory, in K1. I'm hoping that that happens more because they're really talented, and I want the world to know them. And if you don't get the chance to watch the Infusion brand all the time, people are so familiar with the name brand of K1. And then, of course, Glory being on TV, they're the kind of the big ones right now. I'm hoping that down the road, Tafun Askin gets the opportunity to go against some of the better guys so you can see how he'd match up with if he went against a, you know, even an Andy Sauer type. If he had the opportunity to get that on a big stage, Jabir Askarov, just there's a... Steve Moxon, there's a number of guys who I'd love to see him fight in Glory K1, and you would really see his skill set show. He's very, very skilled. Good one here to win this title or defend this title. I'm not 100% sure what it was, but I know that Tafun Askin is the 72.5 kg's world title. There's a lot of titles in this division, a lot of titles in this promotion. It's a little tough to keep a hold on because I believe they have a 67. A 70 and now a 72.5 kg title. So I think they're doing their best to make sure they can make champions of the stars that they have. So they're doing the best to push the promotion forward. But this one's definitely a little bit on the weirder side as far as keeping up with this title and why they have it, particularly since Tayfun's in the 70 kg tournament. So we'll see. But moving forward, I'd like to see more of Tafun Askin. Very, very talented. And still, if you haven't seen it, you got to go watch Tafun Askin versus Muhammad Jiraiya from earlier this year. That's just one of the fights of the year. It was so, so awesome. I'm going to go ahead and finish with one more fight on this card. The female fight was Victoria Lamont. Says she got a victory over Estella Garcia. Wasn't the best performance in terms of they've had some female fights that you're just blown away. At least blown away by the skill set of one of the particular women. That wasn't the case this time. Very slow, plotty fight. I'm glad that Lamont got the victory. You could expect to see her more down the road. But this one wasn't one of those to kind of put the female fights on the highest level, or it didn't reflect the level of skill. And I think both women, you know, can perform better. It was a tough fight, but I think that entertainment-wise, if you're a viewer, the crowd was quiet. They weren't as into this one. And I look at the history of it. I remember I was in London when Iman Barlow at the O2, when she was able to get a victory, and when she got the victory over Alexis Rufus, the crowd was into every round. Like, they were so excited, they were so pushed, and she really performed well. She performed well in Spain 2 weeks before it, and one of the guys who was working for Infusion, he just openly said, you know, I'm not a fan of women's fighting. He said, I'm not against it. He said, it's just not my thing. But then when I watched Iman Barlow fight a couple weeks ago, when I watched this one, plus the reality show that they had, he said, things are winning me over. And this wasn't a fight that was able to win people over towards the brand of kickboxing these two ladies produced. So they've done better with this promotion. They've had better fights. So hopefully next time, you know, it's a greedy fight. It's a tough win. Credit due. You went out, you performed, you trained hard. But entertainment value matters. And if it's a crappy male fight or a crappy woman's fight, it ranks the same. You want to go out there and perform. But it reflects badly on, you know, women when the fights aren't that whole. Not fair. It's not fair. But it reflects badly on the women's product if they have a bad fight. Whereas if it's a bad male fight, they just think that those two guys aren't very good. They don't. It's not a reflection of the whole. So moving forward, I've seen Victoria Lamox in some entertaining fights. So I know that better can come. I'm going to go ahead and move to... I didn't get to talk about some of the Glory victors. I'm going to talk about Glory a little bit more. Of course, I'm going to break down their card for tomorrow, but I'm going to go ahead and go at this slow. And first and foremost, talk about the September 19 card that saw, in a very close fight, even though I kind of leaned every round towards Saulo Calavari, he gets the title victory over Zach Mikasa. Like I said, it was close. It wasn't the most entertaining bout. It was a little dragged on, and it got a little sloppy there at the end. I thought Calavari was able to edge out at least three of the rounds with more kickboxing, whereas Mikasa walked around looking for the big shots. Every once in a while, Mikasa would throw a low kick, but I thought he looked better in their first bout. I thought their first bout looked better for both guys. I just thought that this one early, there was just too much going swinging for the fences. So then when they got to rounds 4 and 5, they didn't show the skill level that they showed in previous bouts. So moving forward, definitely want to see more Calavari. Definitely want to see a rematch with Artem Vakhachev. That'd be a fun fight. I want to see more of this division. I want to see more of these guys competing. And this fight, even though it wasn't a reflection of their highest level, it does show that Saulo Calavari is a good fighter who's winning consistently at a high level, and you might want to consider bringing the Glory brand down to Brazil. I think they do well, and there's enough Muay Thai and kickboxing in Brazil to have a couple guys in the undercard and really put out a good product. So I'm hoping that they use Calavari more down the road. He wins this fight, even though it wasn't the best. I'll go ahead and go through all the fights before I talk about my feelings about how Glory and its mix in the Dynamite show with Bellator went. But first and foremost, I'm going to break down the fights. I'm going to go ahead into another kickboxing match. This fight, both of these fights, it should be said, were not Glory fights, but they made the television broadcast. Kerry Melendez gets a victory over Hedley Griffith, and clearly Kerry Melendez was far superior. Hand speed. I would have liked her to stay with the low kicks more. I thought Hedley was hurt. She could have probably at least scored a down in the third if she was consistent with the low kicks. Kerry abandoned them and kind of went back to her boxing because she was scoring the big shots, the kind of head-snapping shots upstairs. I would prefer more of a stay with the kickboxing game and see if the low kicks can bring about a down or at least weaken the opponent to the point where you can just go ahead and let the hands go full. But I thought Kerry Melendez did a good job of being a technical kickboxer and showing good skill set and landing big shots. And boy, does she have a crowd. She probably had the biggest crowd there. Like the pop for her, the following behind her was huge. She had a lot of people there to see her perform. And when I first saw that she was on the main card, I said it on the podcast show. I was like, how did this one get on the main card? It's not the Glory brand. It doesn't reflect the athletes that they have. Seasoned kickboxers who've been doing this for a long time who reflect the best in the world. But when I heard the crowd response, I was like, okay, that's why they did it. They did it because she's the biggest draw on the card. She's the biggest ticket seller, and she's the one that people most wanted to see. Even though there was some stoppages in the MMA fights later and, a couple of other kickboxing matches and so on, I thought that the pop for this fight was bigger than anything than the whole brand. And there were some elite MMA fighters on the card, but the pop that they had for this fight was above and beyond what they could have asked for Kerry Melendez. So, good win for her. Paul Daly, he got Fernando Gonzalez already came in 7 pounds heavy, came in bigger. So he was pretty much, Daly did a good job of staying with strong combinations and body kicks, combinations and low kicks. He kind of just stayed in the flow of his game. He never got overextended. Didn't feel like chasing the KO big with his right hook. He just stayed poised. And I thought it was actually one of his better kickboxing performances from a technical, aspect. I thought his fighting IQ was pretty good. I thought he didn't overrush things. I thought that he did a good job of not getting hit by too many things. I thought it was a good, solid kickboxing win for Paul Daly, even though people were kind of looking for, this is a guy who got a KO over Stetsarenko, who's a ranked top 10 guy. So they were probably looking for just the right-hand killer. But I thought that he did a good job just being a clean kickboxer. In the most brilliant performance, in my opinion, Siri Adamanchuk gets a clear victory over Anvar Boyazarov. I thought Boyazarov had an uphill climb in the beginning because he's got that aggressive style, but I've mentioned this before when I was talking. I usually use this example a lot. They asked Freddie Roach one time what he thought of the fight between the Donaire and the Rigondeaux fight. And they were like, hey, who do you think is going to win this fight? And so on. And he says, Donaire really likes to sit on counter right hooks. And he says, but Guillermo's never going to give him that. He's never going to be in a place where he gives that up. So when he says that when people hear that, they're thinking, oh, his defense is going to be good, too good, that kind of deal, whatever. But basically what he means is this. If Donaire likes to sit on his left hook whenever Guillermo in particular throws his right jab because he's southpaw. What he means is this. He's not going to stay in a position where he throws that offense and hangs out to get hit. And he only got hit the one time and he went down. But for most of the fight, he had Guillermo was just scoring and moving and keeping Donaire from getting any of the counter shots. He was pretty much looking at air. He didn't give it to him. Sierra Adamanchuk didn't give Boyazarov the opportunity to be there for the war that he was looking for, the pace that he was looking for. I looked, as I said before, I revisited his fight with Giga Chedzik, And I didn't think that Boyazarov won that fight. I thought Giga won that last round. I thought it was close, but I thought that Giga won that last round, making it 2-1. But Anvar did a good job pushing the pace, really being aggressive, really looking for offense, and the fight became a war, and he was able to have some success. Adamczyk didn't give him any of that. He was clean, scored so many clean straight lefts, moved so slick, like he just subtle movement, not big bails, just slightly out of the way and turns, and just keeps Anvar looking, waiting for the battle to happen, waiting for the engagement to happen. And then the next thing you know, the fight's over with on the cards. That's how it should be done. That's what technical acumen is. That's how you use defense. That's how you use movement. Now, again, people watching this in the audience who are just looking for two guys to kill each other, that's not what you're going to get from the top fighters in the world. Sometimes you're going to get guys who've got that strong combination style. Sometimes you're going to get some slick guys. This is not the kickboxing of 2003, 2004, where some of the guys who were in, you know, I even go to 2005, where you look at just that combination low kick return, combination low kick return. The game has evolved a little bit beyond that. So you're starting to get guys like Adamczyk who are in the style of a Georgia Petrosian, who they can hang out and score clean offense, but they also got some slick movement to them. They're not getting hit on the return. And I think as the game advances, we need a little bit more of that. Clearly, no one's going to be a bigger advocate of your, you know, Musab Amirani and Muhammad Kamal type battle. You know, like, we're going to love those kind of fights forever. But I like the diversity of having that slick kind of, you know, savvy kickboxer. And Serhii Adamczyk is that style. Adamczyk, very talented. He should get the next title shot, in my opinion. I don't know if they'll have anything scheduled for that, but I really, really would like to see him get that opportunity. He's very, very skilled. So there's one more kickboxing fight. It was, Jose Palacios gets a split decision over TJ Arcangel, but that's just a fight I'm going to say as note. That was one of the three fights that were Bellator. The only two glory fights were Sal Calavari's win and Adamczyk's win. My bigger issue with the brand was how kickboxing was presented and how, you know, I'm not sure if the commentating was told to do this, but for whatever reason, they felt like they had to make an excuse for kickboxing. And what I meant by that is this. It was almost the assumption that the glory brand of kickboxing means the guys who go out there are going to throw heat in kickboxing. It's going to be a stand-up war and then somebody's going to die. Rather than two very skilled guys in the kickboxing world getting to compete for a title are going to compete for and, you know, show a reflection of the highest brand of fighter in the world. But somebody's going to get a KO. And that's what you got. That's what the sport's about. Someone's going to KO. Fernando Gonzalez brought in to be KO'd by Daly. Like, you know, even though that wasn't a glory, Daly has a glory contract. Gonzalez does not. But the idea was that's what we want to do with it. That's what we want to do with this brand of fighting. That's what we want to do. So every time they fought and you didn't see that, the commentary was like, well, you know, sometimes you think it's going to be awesome and it's not. And sometimes, you know, you can produce this kind of fight and it doesn't happen. And I'm like, we don't need an excuse for our brand. Just call what you're seeing. You know, just call what you're seeing in the kickboxing world. What's reflecting in the ring? We don't need to have the bigger narrative of, oh, we promised you there was a KO going to happen in this fight, and a KO didn't happen in this fight. These guys are really, really good, and if you see the shot coming, you've got a really good chance of surviving it. KO is usually the shot you don't see, the one that catches you by surprise, the one that was set up really well. But if both guys are savvy and they're wise to it, plus, you know, Cavallari doing a good job of staying consistent with his kickboxing throughout, still investing in low kicks despite, I think that that is a reflection of what it's like when these athletes compete at the highest level. Even if the technique wanes a little bit, the reflection that you're seeing at the top is put anybody else with these guys in there, and this level of skill is going to really outlast and outshine anyone else. When you had Adamczyk and you had Boyazarov, that's what you were seeing. You were seeing, you know, Adamczyk's skill level was just better than Boyazarov. But because Boyazarov was in that, you know, war with Giga, that's what they were expecting. So when it happened, they almost felt like they had to give an apology for it. We don't need an apology. Just go ahead and say, this is what happened in the fight. This is a reflection of what happened in the fight. The way that it was presented, the way that they kind of, you know, switched the broadcasting team and going over there, Dave Walsh of Liverkick pretty much said that he felt that they made kickboxing seem it was like their little brother. And if you look at some of the crowds that you had and the history of K1 and so on, whatever, K1, you know, kickboxing, glory, they don't need that. All you need is just to say, hey, this is what's happening in the bout right now. Explain the scores. Don't give an excuse. and just let the product, you know, present itself. That was my kind of big issue with it. As far as kickboxing and MMA working on a card together, I've seen it work a lot. You know, I've seen it work on the New Year's Eve Dynamite shows. It's not something, it was new and they tried it in a season where it's not as popular. And they also, you know, tried it in pretty much the hometown, San Jose. That's kind of the birthplace of Strikeforce and so on. So it kind of had that feel, despite the fact that it was Bellator. But man, we don't need an excuse. Just let the athletes do their thing. You call the fights based off of what you saw. And if they do want to do this again, use all five fights that they use. All five kickboxing fights should be glory fights. I understand the Cara Melendez part, like I said, for the draw and that kind of deal, whatever. But if they're going to try this mix, let the glory brand reflect the glory brand. Let it not be, we got a couple glory fights on here, and we're going to have these kickboxing fights with glory gloves. Not what I'm looking for. Going to go ahead and move to even more reports. We're going to go ahead. K1 had an event on the 22nd of September, and not going to talk about the whole card. There were some exhibitions, and there was stuff kind of all over the place. I'm going to talk about the main event, which is Kamaru Philip Minoru gets a decision victory over Hiromoto Ren. And let me tell you something. Minoru is growing on me. And I said it before, I've always thought that he is a KO fighter, but I thought that in his fight, which should have been a clear win, at minimum, it should have went to an extra round when he went against the champion at 65 kgs, Q Fairtex. He scored the down in the third, and that was enough for them to give him a three-round fight that he was pretty much losing every moment of before he scored that hook to score the down. But I'm starting to realize that there's some method to the madness of Philip and Minoru. I think that the one thing that he was able to accomplish with Hiromoto Ren was he got Ren away from being a kickboxer, and he made Ren just kind of rely on looking to score shots with his hands, and he had Ren looking to just bite down on his mouthpiece and throw back. When he was able to accomplish that, he completely eliminated Ren's ability to win a kickboxing match. Because we know what Philip Minoru is going to do. We know what Kamaru is going to do. He's going to come out. He's going to throw that heat. He's going to walk you down. And he's going to look to get into some exchanges. And he's going to believe in his chin better than you're going to believe in your chin. But most importantly, he believes when he hits you, you're going down. And he's not going down when he takes your hit. So he did a good job of, first of all, investing with single left hooks to the body. Just single shots, walk down looking for the single shots, and then that opened up the left hook upstairs. Later, got into an exchange. He buzzed Ren in the first round. Ren was able to bite down on the mouthpiece, recover, throw back. Ren was definitely determined to throw back every time he got hit hard. But the problem is Minoru, again, he believes in his chin so much. He believes in his power so much that even when he gets you rocked, if you're throwing back, he doesn't care. He's looking to throw kill shots. And after Kamaru gets him hurt in that first round, he probably goes out there to miss 15 kill shots in a row. Like, go ahead, rewatch the fight. It's go to, if you're subscribed to K1, go revisit that fight. And you're going to see exactly what I'm talking about. He's going to get him buzzed. You're going to see Ren kind of do a little dance with his feet. And then Kamaru's going to come in and look for the kill shot. And he's going to miss, and then Ren's going to throw a couple back, and then they're going to get separated, and then Minoru is going to come in again looking for the kill shots, and he's going to miss probably like 14 to 15 punches. Just going to throw heat, just throw as hard as he can, run after him throwing, and he's going to miss them all. But he doesn't care, because he's going to unload shots, he's going to throw heat, and you're going to have to deal with it. That is his style. The thing that made this one interesting was he had Ren thinking, that's the kind of game I got to play. I got to bite down, I got to throw back, and he got away from combinations. He got away. He opened up with a low kick score right away. He could have played just simple jabs, low kicks, movement. Jab, low kicks, movement. He could have played that to at least get a round down. But instead, he decided that I'm going to throw heat when I get the opportunity to. I'm going to try to fight back no matter what. And Philip was able to score a down off of a series of hooks in the second round. I think the down kind of more caught him. Not necessarily. It was a clean score that put him on his butt. But it wasn't so much he was devastatingly hurt afterwards. So the third round was pretty much Ren walking around and not really engaging. I think it seemed he was satisfied with the decision at that time. So Philip Minoru gets the big victory there. And I got to give this dude his credit. He's definitely a top three fighter in the world at 65 kgs, in the kickboxing world. Definitely want to see him continue to fight more opposition. Want to see him fight Ku again. They've got a 65 kg tournament coming up. He is an entertaining guy. He's got a good style about him. You know, for him to be Brazilian, look like a white dude, and speak Japanese clearly, he's got an interesting style. Plus, he's, you look at the hype vids that they have on him. He's, trying to have a style about him. Of course, I'm going to win by KO. Middle finger's up. You know, he's like, he's got kind of an edge to him, you know, and he's having fun. They did a selfie in the corner when they were doing the announcement of him. He's ready to be a star in Japan. He's going to be a good kickboxer. We just got to get some other 65kg fighters in to kind of help that push. And, of course, Ilias Belaid is got to be a regular. We got to get him back in there. But, man, having a big year from Noro. Having a really, really good year. I definitely like what I'm seeing from him. If he wins the 65kg tournament, of course, it depends on who's all in the tournament. I would definitely, he'd be in strong consideration for, you know, one of my top five fighters in the year. But, and this is a guy who I said I was worried about him because he just throws heat. And I was like, man, I want a little bit more skill in my best guy in the world. But he is skilled. He does do things technical. He does throw strong punches. He just, the kickboxing acumen will be even better if he could add kicks to it. But right now he doesn't have to. He just walks people down and throw that heat. Going to go ahead and move on to another card. Controversy happens in Line Fight 24. Basically, we had, you know, there's a couple of things. I'll go ahead and break down, not all the fights, but some of the big ones. Joe Nadawat gets a KO with elbows over Charlie Peters. That was to be expected, but the reason why I bring it up is because Joe Nadawat is a guy who expect to see more of him down the road because they use him on a regular basis. He's going to bring style in, and he's doing a good job of, hey, if I'm better than this other guy's got to go. You know, that's very, very important. So I like that he was out there. I like that he was aggressive, and everybody loved elbow KOs. Speaking of elbow KOs, Gaston Bolanos does it again. He TKOs Benyele in the second with another spinning back elbow. Here's my favorite thing about Bolanos' elbows, all right? Anybody who's ever seen Gaston fight, you know damn well the spinning elbow is coming. You know it's coming. You've practiced it. You've had a guy go in there and drill and throw them at you. And you are laying on the ground anyways. You're looking at the ceiling anyways. You are looking at the ref anyways because he scores it anyways. It's one thing. Like, I've seen it happen before. Sometimes in my gym, I'll be talking to my fighters, and sometimes my fighters will go out there and they'll say, I really want to be the kind of fighter where the person in front of me doesn't know what I'm going to do next. And that's all fine and good. My favorite kind of fighter is the kind of guy who you know exactly what he's going to do, and it happens anyways. That really lets you know someone's skill set. It really lets you know the separation in their abilities. And when Gaston Bolanos goes out there, I'm telling you, everybody knows Bolanos is going to throw those spinning back elbows, and he just gets them no matter what. The thing with him is I got to see the level of competition grow. I think they're moving him well in the brand, but man, if there's one guy who needs somebody international to come in and compete against him, it's Gaston. Like, he is... He doesn't need to be moved slow. I almost look at him in terms of how I look at Tiffany Von Soest. Because of her athleticism, she has been able to, you know, go against world-class competition without those world-class opportunities. She didn't go to IFMA. She had to fight in the California area to build resume, you know, had an amateur career, went to a pro career, had some draws early, didn't get separation. Think about this. Even before, like, her Lion fight run, she had, you know, she met Jemima Bertrain, and Jemima was, you know, and still is one of the best in the world. She's got a bunch of fights on her resume, and they met early in her career, very, very early. And she's gone on to be, you know, so much better since then. It's crazy how much elite competition that she's gone against in these past few years, and she doesn't have half the fights these girls have. Gaston Bolanos can be moved in the same way. Bolanos is kind of up to his team, how they want to move him. But man, I like that he's fighting for Lion Fight. I hope that he gets more opportunities to compete because you only get so much. What are you going to get? 3 fights, 4 fights on the brand? And I would like it if he could get at least 6 fights in a year, at least 6. But it's just about him getting higher level of competition. I'm definitely curious to see what happens from him moving forward. Going to go ahead and go to definitely a surprise for me as Andrzej Topic gets a victory over Stefan Melidi. I definitely thought Melidi was going to win this one. I thought that he was a more talented I thought he's a more veteran guy. But Topic did a good job of winning the line fight featherweight championship. I don't know how long I think Topic's going to hold it, but I know that he did a good job of getting his hands raised here because I would not have guessed this one. I really like Stefan Melidi's skill set, and he's got a good international resume to back that up. But Topic gets the win. Featherweight championship, there's a lot of guys around there for him to fight around that weight class. And I just want to see more. Got to see more from this brand. I like this matchup on this broadcast because, you know, most of the time it's got to be American versus American because it's acts as a shonen in the States, and they got to make sure that their undercard is filled with a bunch of amateurs from the local scene, because they got to get that crowd filled. But this one was a good one moving forward. Now for the controversy, final fight in the card, Kai Hollenbeck gets a, I guess they call it a decision, because they go to the card, but he gets a decision over Richard Abraham. First of all, it's got to be said, Kai Hollenbeck was winning this fight. Hollenbeck was more skilled, stronger fighter, scored well in every round. He was definitely the better fighter. Richard Abraham, you know, lands a punch. Punch, you know, causes a cut. They look at the cut. They decide to go to the cards instead of calling it a TKO victory. And then in that moment, Kai Hollenbeck is given the five round or the unanimous decision. In my personal opinion, letter of the law, Richard Abraham should have won. Like, if you say, what's the law? What's the rules? If the cut is caused by a strike, which it was in this situation, didn't say headbutt or anything, it was caused by a strike, it should have been, oh, who caused the strike that caught, you know, that determined the fight? Richard Abraham did. Richard Abraham is your winner. Now, would the winner reflect what happened in the fight? No, but that's just kind of the dangers of being with fights with cuts and so on. Clearly, Kai Hollenbeck was way better than Richard Abraham. This is not close. This is not up for debate. He was winning the fight. When it went to the cards, not one person was like, oh, this is going to be close because it's going to the cards. Everybody was like, the more dominant fighter was Kai Hollenbeck. So when it didn't go to Richard Abraham, it's unfortunate and so on, but I do think that that's what should have happened. Because Kai Hollenbeck was so much better, it's almost like the person who won the fight got their hand raised. So despite that, how the went about the ending, it's like the guy who showed to be the better fighter in there got the win. So that's why it doesn't bother me at, you know, as much as it would. But I'm just saying, letter of the law, Richard Abraham should have been the winner. But I definitely think who was the better fighter, who, you know, was winning the fight, Kai Hollenbeck, without question. So I can definitely see how people can have trouble with that. And it's one of those things where it's like, if this becomes a history, people are going to start wondering about the Lion Fight promotion, you know, because it's like, I've seen this kind of thing happen before. And I kind of felt, the biggest example I can think of is Steve McKinnon versus Nathan Carnage Corbett. When they first met, a lot of people don't know this. Clearly, who won the kickboxing match, who won the Muay Thai fight, who was dominating the rounds throughout, unquestioned Nathan Carnage Corbett was winning those rounds. All of a sudden, he causes an elbow that gets a cut on Steve McKinnon. The cut's bad, McKinnon's able to go. He says he's able to go. McKinnon comes out, house on fire, I want to say, you know, fourth round, really letting his hands go, really throwing kicks, really going hard, really, despite the fact that he's getting backed up and he's still losing, he's just having moments where he just lets it go. He then scores the elbow and he cuts Carnage. And I'm remembering, even as I say this, I'm just remembering Mike Chiavello go wild, you know, Carnage is cut, Carnage is cut. I'm remembering that moment. What happens? They look at his cut, and then they determine that Carnage's cut is bad enough to stop the fight, but McKinnon's cut was worse, and it's going to be the one that stops the fight because it happened before. And then they gave a cut victory TKO to Nathan Carnage Corbett. When you see that happen as an outsider, you're like, what kind of shenanigans is this? What kind of nonsense is this? How can you go ahead and make that decision on behalf of the guy who is the ticket seller, the favorite, let's be honest, probably the greatest welter, our greatest cruiserweight fighter in the history of international Muay Thai. Carnage Corbett's got a good argument for being that. If you look at his resume at 86 kgs, between 90 and 86 kgs, he's, let me not say look at his resume, I'll say look at the fact that he was still fighting full rules Muay Thai, getting high level victories for a long time. I've always called him the Bernard Hopkins of the division. I look at that, and I look at how that fight went down, and I look at what was the result of that fight and how that went down. When I saw Hollenbeck and Abraham and how things went down at the very end and how decisions were made off of who was winning the fight and who got cut and what cut should stop and that kind of stuff, whatever, it kind of gave me a sour taste towards the promotion. Now, I'm not there with Lion Fight yet, but I can see how an outsider could view this, look at this, and be like, man, they've already got a resume or a reputation for just bringing in people to lose to the Americans and giving their stars fights where they can just dominate. That is the reputation of Lion Fight. If I were to say, even in this country, people can see that, okay, this individual is getting this sort of opposition so that they can look good. So that's kind of already the reputation they have. It's going to be tough if this sort of thing is added on top of it. So again, let's not go jumping the gun. Let's let things play out. Let's let more competitions already coming in for their stars. They're already doing a better job of that. But I can say, looking at the last 2 years, there are definitely, I'll go back 3 years, there are people internationally that look at Lion Fight and go, their matches are all made for a certain person to win in a certain way. And that's why the matchups were made, and that's why the fight was scheduled, and that's why things look the way they do. Man, I can understand, people seeing that and feeling that way about their athletes. But they are a brand first and foremost. They've got to promote the stars that push their brand and help them to have success. So I understand the decisions that they make with who fights who. But it's going to be difficult if people see something like a Hollenbeck situation and say it sucks, but Richard Abraham should have won, and Hollenbeck wins anyways. I can understand someone seeing that and having a big problem with it. We're going to go ahead, and I'm not going to talk about too much of it. King of Kings had a heavyweight kind of Grand Prix. The only thing I really want to bring up is people who I think you should pay attention to moving forward. Clearly, there are some names in here of guys that we've all heard before, and it's cool to kind of see them kind of get their names back in and again. Thomas Rahn getting a win over Colin George, TKO in the second round. Thomas Rahn, man, he's been around. Get a win over Ignashoff. He's got, lost to Daniel Gita, but he's just the consummate, have gloves, will travel, will fight, puts on good shows. He shows up. He never had the KO pop, but he shows up, and he's a steady kickboxer. He gets a win. We also have, breaking down this field, I don't want to do all of it. I will say one of the surprising decisions was Julius Maka of Lithuania getting a victory over Sebastian Chiabano. I've never been high in Chiabano outside of fighting and super combat. I've never thought that he's been consistent on promotions outside of, pretty much his own in Romania. But I did think that he was going to beat Maka. And then we've got Stepan Krilic getting a win from Moldova, and Mikhail Tyrinski of Poland getting a victory over Vladimir Tok. I just wanted to go ahead and mention a couple of those fights of note and something to kind of look forward to as we move down the road. I didn't want to get into it full. Like I said, as I looked down this card, most of it is guys that you haven't heard of, and I wasn't able to watch all the fights. The one fight I do want to say, because it does have two recognizable names, both fighting in K1 at one period of time, Pavel Zurevlev getting a KO victory in the third over Freddie Camayo. Freddie Camayo, he's a steady kickboxer, and he's got as Gokhan Saki said to me in an interview many years ago, it's almost like he doesn't have a style. He just kind of, he comes out, and he just kind of throws things at random. You can't pick up on him, you can't pick up on his speed, and he gets his hand raised, and that's something to do. But Pavel Zurevlev is a guy who, he started off, man, when I first heard of him, I was just getting these little clips, still back in the Mega Upload days, and I was like, I want to follow this guy. A couple of YouTube videos emerged later, then he gets the win over Gokhan Saki, because Gokhan Saki gets injured in K1, and I'm like, sky's the limit. Then he fights Carnage, loses to Carnage in Perth, Australia. Then he just has moments where it's like he's winning, and then he loses. So he stayed in that kind of, when he goes against high-level competition, hangs out in the same area. He's got a win over Benjamin Adebuyi. He's got a loss over Benjamin Adebuyi. Both KOs in both situations. KO win, KO loss. But he's a good fighter. I want to see him fighting on the highest level. And this was a fight at 93 kgs. I would love it if either of these two could get into glory and get that opportunity. They're very, very skilled. And at most, they're going to be a good name for some of the glory brand guys to knock off. But I want to see more from both fighters. If Freddie's towards the end, he doesn't want to travel as much. And again, he almost fought on the Glory Show a couple months ago in France. I understand if he doesn't want to take on that level of competition, but I still think that he's a guy who will fight anybody in the world. And Pavel Zurevlev is just, get him out there. He's still young enough to have a good run and be competitive and really fight some good names. So I'm hoping to see more of him moving on down the road. We're going to go ahead and get into our preview show. I'm going to go ahead and start off with the Yakao show. I'm going to go ahead and do some full rules Muay Thai. There's been some changes. I had some Dutch guys hop in on the card and replace some other names. But I'm going to go ahead and break this fight card down. I'm not going to do every fight. I'm going to do most of them, though. Here are the fights. I'm going to go ahead and go to the Yakao 14 part. First, I'm going to start with Josh Turbrell as he gets a fight with Reese McAllister. I'm really high on Reese McAllister. I thought Reese McAllister did, great things as far as him being in the Top King tournament. I think that his hands are getting better. I think that he's always been about his business. He's always been about the gym, working hard, him and the relationship with his dad, dad's lad, as he calls himself. I just think that he's a very talented guy. I've got him beating Josh Turbo. I think Turbo will have some moments, but man, Reese McAllister, he's strong at 70 kgs. He's even stronger at 67 kgs because he could still make that weight. But I love that he's a competing international Muay Thai rules. I mean, that's where he comes from. I like him in kickboxing too, so I'm hoping that Glory gives him the opportunity. Glory, like I said, I'd still love for them to return to a 8-man tournament format at some period of time. And if they do go 4-man, I want to see Reese McAllister's name pop up in one of their lightweight tournament list. But he's a very skilled guy. I expect him to, I won't say get the stoppage, but I think that he'll have a very clear victory over Josh Turbill. And one of the more entertaining fights, Masaru Glunder is going to take on Sanchai, and Glunder is going to lose. And here's why. Glunder's got the power. He's got the, you know, he's going to come up with the knees or whatever. It's the savviness. It's the clinch. You always worry about Dutch fighters when it comes to the clinch. And what I mean by that is this. Not all Dutch fighters. People who train at Lucien Corbin's gym, he's, you know, like there's a, you know, in Holland to look out for the knees with one of Lucien's guys. He really focuses on it. He focuses on the clinch. If you watch my documentary, when I do the thing on the coaches, he said that he didn't even know about Thai fighters in Thailand until he went on vacation down there. And then he heard about the gym and he went to try out the gym. And he went to the clinch. He said, this guy was just throwing me all over the place in the clinch. And he said, I went home mad that day. And he said, I swear my mom, I'm never going to get dominated in clinch like that again. And he said he went and he worked at it really, really hard. And he focused on it and he developed some of his own techniques. And he said, that's never going to happen again. And he said, even when some of his guys has competed with the Thais, he said they've had their moments in the clinch. He said, we felt like we were the best clinchers against a lot of the guys that we faced. So he had that moment happen. And then he, you know, made that change. Most of Holland have kickboxers. They have guys who are used to the K1 rules of scoring from back in the day where you get your combination flows in and you get your low kick flow right afterwards. So combination of the low kicks, combination of the low kicks. And then, of course, there's a new style that's kind of emerging where there was, and I talk about it all the time, where there's this long pad holding that you'll see where people will throw like 10, 12, 13 strikes in a combination, and that would be how they kind of work their pad flow out there. And they're starting to be guys like Ilias Blade and Muhammad Jiraiya who fight like that. They do these long series of offensive strikes that you can't get a hold of. They just flow right into it. That's the new style. That new style still doesn't have clinch. There's not a lot of guys who focus on the clinch. So if a Dutch person has success in the clinch, it's usually because they're taller than the other person. I'm expecting Mr. Glunder, who's really good at step-up knees, really good at kind of finding distant strikes. I think he's going to struggle finding those strikes on Sanchai. He's going to close the distance, and I'm expecting him to get body lock throwed a lot. He's going to struggle with Sanchai's body lock throw. Sanchai's going to come out, of course, be himself. You know, expect the feet to be shuffling. Expect the, you know, the jumping inside leg kick. Expect the, you know, the handstand kick. He's going to bring out all the tools. I think Sanchai, because of Glunder, how upright he is, he's going to be able to have a field day. He's going to be able to score those shots. But Glunder does have the ability to catch him with something to hurt him. I just don't see that shot ever landing. Sanchai is just too skilled, too slick. He's very, very talented. I'm very excited to see this. And Glunder, who, he's not the original opponent. He's just a guy who's training in the gym, training hard, just got through fighting in K1. As I mentioned before, Glunder is one of the victories of Minoru Philip. Kimura. Like, he's one of, Kimura, one of Philip's victories from earlier this year, a fight that I thought he was going to win for sure. And Glunder, of course, has got the victory over Masaki Nori. So he's a talented dude, but I just think that Sanchai is going to really have the advantage over him in the full rules Muay Thai set. That ends your Cal 14 breakdown, just those two fights. There are other fights on the card, but I really want to focus on some of the bigger cards or the bigger fights that they have on the Cal 15 portion of it. Let's go ahead and start off with Jordan Watson versus Jordan Piku. Jordan is a guy who just got through making it to the final of the K1 70 kg tournament. He got all the way there before he lost to Murat Gorian. No shame there. If you ever seen Jordan Picard fight before, his chin is up. He's got kind of a weird upright style, and he throws that heat. He throws heat. He has a 100% opportunity of landing something big that can shock Jordan Watson, that can sit him down, that can, you know, score down, even score a knockout. He 100% has that ability. It would not be him getting lucky. He will bite down, walk through Jordan's offense, and score something big. Jordan definitely has that opportunity. Where he lacks is in Muay Thai acumen, the understanding of the sport, the understanding of distance. I'm expecting Jordan Watson to score well in the clinch. I'm expecting him to score well with his boxing and his movement. And I'm expecting a lot of body lock throws and sweeps. Jordan kicks at him at all, Jordan's going to catch that and put that down. Watson's body kicks will really help because if you had a low kick game, Jordan could really sit on eating the kick and then throwing the punches right afterwards. Because Watson plays a body kick game more than a low kick game, he can keep knocking you off balance. He can keep rocking your base. He can keep you moving left and right. Watson really, really is a talented dude, in particular in Full Rules Muay Thai. I expect him to get the decision here, not a stoppage, unless one of the knees score big, and I wouldn't rule out Watson really scoring some damage with the low kicks if he decided to go to it, because he's had success with low kicks in the past. But it's the body kicks that I think will keep Jordan Pereira from being able to walk him down. So let's not be surprised if that's the game plan, to keep him from throwing that heat by putting the body shot on him, and moving. Next fight, I profiled Christopher Shaw when I had my breakdown of the up-and-coming fighters, you know, in the world. If you looked at my kickboxing documentary, I really do believe in Christopher Shaw. He's a very talented dude. I think that he's got the combination style to have success in both kickboxing and Full Rules Muay Thai. He throws enough volume. I think that Kareem Benui is a talented veteran guy who has all the tools in his clinch and in his effective offense to walk Shaw down, win with aggression, win in the clinch. He has that ability. But I'm going to go ahead and pick Christopher Shaw in the upset. I picked Christopher Shaw to win last time, and he fought well. He just lost. He fought very, very well. I think he's going to beat Kareem Benue. I think he's going to land more offense. He's going to have more movement. He's definitely going to land more hands. It's just about how does he bite down. I think he's going to score down at some period of time in this fight. I think that this is going to be a breakout performance for Christopher Shaw. Kareem Benui has got every opportunity to win. And if he did win this fight, I wouldn't be surprised at all. He is a high-level top 15 guy in the world around the weight class. In particular, if you go to Full Rules Muay Thai, he's very, very talented as an international brand. You know, outside of Thailand, he's an international, really good international. I'd even say star as far as that weight class goes because he gets so many international opportunities. But Christopher Shaw, I think if he wins this one, K1 should really consider bringing him in for the 60 kg tournament. He's the right size. I really do believe he's good enough, and I'm hoping to see more of Christopher Shaw in future, and I've got him winning this one. Last fight on the card is can Liam Harrison beat Sing Dam Kitmu 9? I picked Liam Harrison to get the upset before. I picked him to win over the Elite Ties. I went ahead and went out on a limb. I do not think it happens. Again, Sing Dam is confident that he's going to be able to block the low kicks. And if he can get Liam Harrison playing body kick, playing second, playing, you know, trying to respond to Sing Dam's game, which is what the Thais usually, who have success with Liam Harrison, usually do. The thing that they're able to go out there is they, all of a sudden, Liam Harrison's trying to play the game, play the rhythm game, try to pick up on them, trying to play reactive instead of proactive. When Liam Harrison comes out there with, all right, I'm taking your leg off, Kulabin. He goes out there and he has a lot of success. When he really starts it early, gets to chopping early, he has a lot of success. You look at his fight over in America where he came and he won the lion fight title. He was just so aggressive with the kicks so early on. Didn't care whatsoever about the offense of his opponent. He just knew that he was the better guy and he brought the fight. If he does that, it's his best opportunity to win. But if he comes out, starts, you know, bouncing on the front foot and starts trying to play the game and listening to the music and slow starting and all the other kind of stuff, whatever, it's going to be Sing Dam's fight. So really, Liam Harrison, his ability to stay in the fight is all up to how active he is and how aggressive he is. But I definitely got to lean towards the Lumpini champion of Sing Dam Kitmu 9. So good stuff there. Of course, we're going to go ahead and wrap the show up with talk of, you know, there's some news and notes that I wanted to talk about. But really, I want to focus on wrapping the show up on the Glory brand. And clearly, there are I can throw a couple small news things at you guys. One of them changed recently. Fedor was, you know, having his MMA return, and he was going to fight the K1 veteran. I mean, it's just a fight that I wouldn't have expected because of the name that they use. But he was going to fight Singh Jadeep. And of course, you guys know him from Kickboxing History. There's a good chance that fight was going to be put together. But man, that fight is now off. Singh Jadeep, of course, he had a couple of notable K1 wins. He just didn't have the KO, the power to make it in K1 and to make it in glory. So, of course, he had, you know, losses to, you know, Daniel Sam and stuff like that, whatever. But he did have a win over Karatanov, and at one period of time, he had some hype behind him. But the last I hear, he is out of it, you know, out of the fight. And that's good because I'd rather Emelianenko go against someone else. But I do want to bring up that Shootboxing is got a opportunity for Rena to fight MMA, and of course Rena has won three of the last four, off the top of my head, three of the last four shootboxing, you know, women's tournaments. So I understand her doing this and making opportunity for her to make money, but I do like her as a kickboxer, so I'm hoping that she returns to that for sure. I also want to bring up the fact that there is K1 announced their big tournament that's coming up, so that should be one of the bigger tournaments of the year because of the 65 kg weight class. It'd be different if it was a much bigger weight class, but man, I really want to point out that it's important that we have the level of athletes that we do stepping in and competing at 65 kgs. I'm hoping the brand does a better job of looking for a few more international names because I think 65 kgs could be a good weight class for them. They do a great job. 60, of course, they've got the best guys in the world, but K1, we really want you to get some more guys at 65 kgs if that's the weight class that you're going to mess with. Glory has announced two shows, so they're going to go ahead and Glory had a very, very nice bounce back here in terms of how many shows they put on. Some people are upset with, you know, who was on the cards and the map. That's kind of people a little confused by that. They weren't able to follow the fights as much because they just didn't know who was going to get the next title opportunity. It's looking like we're having a lot of those things answered for us now, as, of course, they've got a huge show in Amsterdam. That one's going to have Rico Verheeren defending his title for the second time this year, and Nicky Holtzkin. Nicky Holtzkin, it was just announced that he's going to be going against Paul Daly. All awesome there. So I'm really excited about that card. Plus, I want to say there's a featherweight contender tournament. That tournament that's going to have Mousab Amrani in it, man, we got to get some other names in there. That's a weight class that the Dutch are strong at. They got a lot of really good guys around that featherweight weight class. I mentioned Ilias Belay before. They got to go ahead and stack that dude up, get some really good good fights from the guys in that weight class. I'm expecting them to have one of their better shows of the year. I also expect, they're going to go back to Italy. We talked about that before. We talked about that with Georgia Petrosian, and they have also added that Sidichai is going to be fighting Robin van Roosmalen on that card. So I like that we've got this weekend's fights that are going on tomorrow, and we've already got the schedule mapped out for the rest of the year. And that's not to mention what's going to happen on that Dynamite card that coming up weekend. So very, very excited about that, and I'm really hoping that we get some high-level action. Before I get into the Glory breakdown, I also want to take the time to bring up the fact that Infusion has another card going on this weekend, and the aforementioned Ilias Belay is on that card. So if you want to see all action, I'll do my best to let you guys know when it's happening. But Ilias Belay is the truth. Muhammad Jiraiya is on that card, the truth. Hafid El-Bastadi versus Harak Agorian. This is probably, like, from the outside looking in, Anka Van Gestel versus Aleid Lawat, Nordin Bin Ma against Sergey Sanchez. This is a full card of their stars. Jiraiya is their star. Belaid is their star. Van Gestel has been the title holder. She's defended a couple times. She's an entertaining brand of kickboxing to watch. Nordin Bin Ma, this is Hafid El-Bastadi. You are getting some of the best of their promotion. So make sure you get to the opportunity to watch that Belgium card. It's going down on Saturday. I'll follow me on Twitter. I'll do my best to post and let you guys know when it's happening, because I'm going to be watching college football here in the States, and I'm definitely going to be watching this kickboxing card and giving the round-by-round. But this is a legit card, so I wanted to bring that up before I got into my breakdown of what's going to happen on Glory. Going to go ahead and finally get into this Glory card. And like I said, I really, truly believe that this year, despite the fact that, man, there's been some some setbacks. There's been some glory cards that I haven't been that interested in. I think on the end, this is such a bounce back year, because last year they had the big gap because they spent a lot of money on the pay-per-view, which I didn't think they should have done. I didn't think the timing was for it. But I thought that the brand was still good. Those who watched that fight card were very entertained because there was knockouts all over the places and there were downs and it was a long card and Mirko came back and it was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun on their kickboxing card. And I look back at that and I go, man, what can they do but, you know, to improve on that, because they lost so much money in it. They didn't do a show until the end of the year. Since then, they've been consistent with, we're going to do a show this month, this time. And I think their biggest gap was, I think July was the only time where they didn't have a show this month. I'm just kind of going off the top of my head. But they did a good job with this one, despite the fact that there were some injuries and that kind of deal, whatever. Clearly, the original fight was supposed to be Joe Schilling, as he was supposed to be fighting for the middleweight tournament championship. That fight, of course, is now off because the injury to Artem Levin. But overall, the heavyweight tournament, the middleweight fights that they've got, this is going to be a fun card. I'm very much excited to see this. Let's go ahead and start breaking it down. Not going to do the whole thing. I'm going to do most of it, though. First of all, we've got Casey Green versus Francis Ambang. Bringing Ambang back, this is a bigger weight class for him. It is at welterweight. So this is his weight class. Ambang and Casey Green. Ambang, of course, is going to give you the most consistent combination, the low kick type of fighting. Casey Green, he's got that kind of greedy style. Gotta lean Ambang on this one. But I think Green has got the ability to score something that will check Ambang's chin. Like, Ambang's been KO'd bad before. I just believe in his ability to win kickboxing rounds far better than I believe. And Casey Green, even though Casey Green, I'm telling you, he's a talented dude. He was able to win some rounds. I just like Ambang a little bit better there. But I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if Casey Green won by KO. I really wouldn't. He does have that kind of ability. And Ambang's got that kind of chin. So we'll see what we get from this moving forward. I'm not going to do that fight. I will also do one more fight on their undercard. As I look at this undercard, I'm saying, like, there's some local guys in here. There's not too many super notable international names, guys that I'm going to let fight a few times before I focus them on the show. But Robert Thomas versus David Redeff is a fight I'm bringing up because I do believe Robert Thomas is a talented kid. I believe that he is very, very skilled. I think that if he got some time and he got the fights, he could compete up there with even the Barretts and the Jacobys. And I thought that he had some very competitive moments when he went against Schilling. He just needs the rounds. And I think that this is a good fight for him. I think it's a good fight for him to get rounds. Hopefully he comes out, he gets some good kickboxing in for at least a round and a half. And then sometime in the second round or early third, maybe he can get the stoppage. But I like him. I like his skills. I think that he's already got the international opportunities, fought in Brazil before and so on. I like that he's on this card. I want to see more of him down the road, and I think that he gets the win here. Let's go ahead and move into the main card. The four-man heavyweight tournament is a fun, legit tournament. Ben Edwards, of course, I'm sure he's excited to go back to Denver because the last time he was in Denver, he, you know, drew Errol Zimmerman, and things didn't go that well for him. He came out letting that heat go, looking for his big KOs, because that's how Ben Edwards gets down. And then he was caught with the Errol Zimmerman combo, the right knee to the right hook afterwards. That is how he gets down. He plays with both sides. He can go left knee to left hook, or he can go right knee to right hook. And he does a good job of scoring that well. Ben Edwards was caught by that. But before that, Ben Edwards had some good fights, some good comeback victories. He is a good fighter for the Glory brand. He has a good style. He's going to go against Jafar Wilnes. Jafar Wilnes had a lot of success in China this year. I really lean towards Jafar Wilnes to win this fight because I think that his kickboxing IQ and his confidence and his kickboxing ability is really, really high right now. He's doing a lot of good things. I'm excited to see him perform. I think Edwards has got the ability to crack him because Wilnes can get hit. But I just think that Wilnes and the victories that he got for Kunlun earlier this year, I just think he's on a roll right now, and I think that he's going to be able to win this fight. Mladen Brustovac is the dark horse for me in this tournament. And if he were going against Wilnes or Edwards, I think I would lean towards him possibly pulling off the upset. But he's going against Benjamin Adebuyi, who is hungry, looking for that opportunity to get another shot at the champion. Benjamin Adebuyi is just, he's the bigger, better kickboxer of the guys in this bracket. And he's skilled now. He's chinny, he's been hit before, he's been dropped before. Brustovac definitely has the opportunity to do that. But I just like Adebuyi's kickboxing acumen over the other guys. He's gotten better every year. He's gotten better with his boxing. kickboxing flow, his ability to combo return. When he throws offense, he throws a series of offense. And I really like him. He's talented. I think that he's going to win this fight. And I think that he's going to beat Wilnis in the heavyweight tournament final. I'm going to say he will stop Wilnis, but I think he'll get a decision over Rustavik. And I think that Wilnis will stop Edwards. I think that that's a really good opportunity because Edwards doesn't handle the low kicks that well. Actually, I changed that. Edwards, Wilnis would beat Edwards by decision. Going to go ahead and go to the middleweight fights on the card. Clearly, these fights were made for the USA audience as we got Dustin Jacoby going against Wayne Barrett. And the question is, can Jacoby overcome Wayne Barrett's athleticism? Barrett, I would love him to develop a little bit more consistency in his kickboxing. Like, I think that he's got all the athleticism part down, but sometimes he just doesn't believe in his combination of kick flow to score consistently enough. Jacoby, getting better all the time. The four-man tournament that he just had was really good for his confidence because he was able to go against the kind of guys that he should have been going against. We're talking about a guy who won that $50,000 tournament in Oklahoma, so we've talked about it before, took it on, 48 hours and just drove down. And I love it when I talked to him about it. He actually stayed at my house because he was helping my heavyweight, Jared Rochalt, for his UFC debut. So we brought him down, and he came. He was a kickboxer for a week. And we sat there, and we were talking to him, and he was saying that, man, I just saw it as an opportunity to get some sparring in, to get some sparring and get paid. That's why he went to that tournament, and he ended up winning all the fights by KO. That, of course, then put him in a position where they're calling him on short notice, and they're putting him in tournaments, and he's going against world-class guys like Daniel Younga and Murad Buzidi. And I'm like, hey, this guy's getting thrown to the wolves. He needs some development time. He got rushed in there. And going to Holland did a good job as far as getting his kickboxing flow going. But, man, there's some tough dudes out there. And he needed to slow it down and just get some wins. And that four-man tournament they had him in a couple months ago was perfect to accomplish that. The question is, can he overcome the athleticism of Barrett? I lean Barrett slightly. I think this could be an extra round type of fight, but I think Barrett has the ability to score a kind of flash down. But the consistent offense can come from Jacoby. This really is a good fight for both guys because Barrett needs rounds too. He ain't fought a lot of guys. His high-level opportunities didn't give him the consistency. He's got the win over Schilling. He just hasn't fought enough guys. He lost to Wilnis earlier this year. I want to say he also lost to, I can't remember how that tournament went down, but I want to say he also lost to Simon Marcus. But he's a skilled guy. Both guys are Americans who just don't have the fights that the Europeans have gotten. So I'm glad that they're getting the opportunity to fight each other. This one should be a good one. Joe Schilling then faces the other Wilnis brother, Jason Wilnis. Jason Wilnis is definitely having a better run right now. I think he came out. He throws really hard. And I remember when I had Ryan Scalia back on the show before, he'd always talk about, man, this guy just throws heat. I just don't know why he doesn't score KOs all the time. But he definitely throws fast enough and hard enough. Joe Schilling, of course, got that weird style. You watch Joe Schilling on the pads, looks like he's going to be a straight-up tall, full-rules Muay Thai guy. But he comes out with a switch stance, spinning back kicks, spinning back fist. The knockdown that he scored on Thomas earlier this year, Robert Thomas, he literally did a spinning back fist with his left hand. After it was kind of scored or blocked, he then posted with that left hand, and then he threw a right hand behind it. That's some slick stuff. That is some slick stuff. So Joe Schilling's going to come with that slickness. Part of me is wondering if Wilnis is going to score enough of the low kicks to get the victory. It definitely has the ability, but I just think Schilling is just wild enough, just able to stay out of range enough to score something weird, score consistently, stay away from getting low kicked off fight, and I think that Joe Schilling is going to get the victory here. I wouldn't be surprised if he scored it down, just with something weird, but I think that Joe Schilling is going to win a close decision and then possibly still be slated to fight Artem Levin, even though they probably should be doing the rematch with Simon Marcus. So, good stuff. I'm hoping you guys enjoy the fights. I'll be back next week. I'm going to do my best to be back every week throughout the rest of the season. And like I said, I apologize for the break. Thank you for listening. Definitely continue to follow kickboxing. Support the show. Support liverkick.com. Any place that does, advertising, that does reporting, that supports the kickboxing brand. Get out there, support them, back them. We all appreciate it. We love the game. I do this because I love it. I don't get paid to do this. I love the sport of kickboxing. So support it and show up in droves when the fight events come to your town. Peace.